Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And we are here once again. I am very excited about today's guest.
I am too.
We have a very sweet treat in store. Hint, hint. Welcome. We have Kelly Truex Taylor with Bruce's Candy Kitchen. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thank you. You stepped out of your busy shop, came here to talk candy, to talk life, maybe talk ducks. I see that you're a duck fan. We can do that too. Do all the above.
And do people always introduce you like, we've got a sweet treat?
It follows with
yeah.
I know. She's so nice.
It's good.
She's just like, sure, I'll put up with that.
Until they get to know
exactly.
Me.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like when people say hysterical society. No.
And then they get to know you. Yeah. Ha, ha, ha. Okay. Oh, I should start, right? I have my slang.
Well, do we have anything to plug? You were at Fun and Games. I saw part of your family there.
Yes.
So that was lovely. It was wonderful weather.
It was. Oh, it's always our favorite. That's like our...
And did you go to the Diamonds and Derby?
We did all sorts of things, yes. Went to Columbia Memorial Hospital's Diamond Derby. We went to Consejo Español's fundraiser for...
Did you smash a car?
Mariposa Casa. Yeah, I did not. And then I had four kids with me, and two of the four were like totally into it. And the younger two thought about it and then saw the others doing it, and they're like, absolutely not. They wanted no sledgehammer, no axe, no nothing. I'm like, okay, I thought they would have been the ones that would want to do it, but nope, didn't want to do it.
Which ones wanted to do it?
Carly and Alma, the two oldest. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know. And Carly like obliterated it. Yeah. It's kind of an odd fundraiser, but it is for a very good cause. And you can go online and learn more about Mariposa Casa.
That's right. Let's see. So we've got coming up this Thursday, May 15th, Thursday Night Talks with Zachary Stocks.
Yes.
Talking about the original dedication of the Astoria Column, but really railroad history that ties into that.
That's great.
So that'll be fun. And then, of course, June 7th is the 40th anniversary of the Goonies.
Yay. Which we celebrate every day.
That's true.
We kind of
do celebrate the Goonies every day. How can you not? We'll be talking more about that in the next few weeks.
Okay. Sounds good.
So you got something for us?
I got my word. This is slang, vintage slang. So we're going to see if we can bring it back. I got my little flashcard out. So it's, and it's from, it's from 1922. Know your onions.
Know your onions, 1922.
Any idea, Kelly or Mac,
so
how to use this phrase?
I guess first, you can appear a little smarter than me.
It's a verb.
It's a verb. Know your onions is to be knowledgeable about, I'm going to say, cooking.
Oh, you are so close, Mac, so close. You should have just stopped partway there. Any guess about how to know your onions?
Cook.
It's to be knowledgeable.
Oh.
And also, it could also be used as to be hip, is the other term. If you're hips, that plumber really knows his onions. It's knowledgeable in plumbing.
I don't want my plumber to know his onions.
Or my older brother knows his onions, which means he's hip. So your kid's going to use that one anytime soon?
Nope, not totally coming back.
Okay, everyone's shaking their head. Okay, so we don't know our onions.
I like the phrase by itself. It's just kind of fun to say, know your onions. But I don't like the context.
But see, in another 80 years, it's going to be sus.
No,
bruh.
It's really not, no.
if you ask my little 8-year-old nephew, it will.
Yeah, I would like to ask them again in 20 years.
Yes, well, it's funny because he got t-shirts for his birthday that say, that's sus, bro.
Oh,
and then another one, I can't even think of the word. He had no idea what it meant, but he says it all the time. And so he says it incorrectly, probably,
that's something that's going to go in the old kid clothes box, and then 20 years from now they're going to open up and gonna be like, did I really wear this?
They're going to love it. They're going to love it. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So this day in history, things that happen tomorrow, May 12th, 1777, the first ice cream advertisement. Philip Lindsay in the New York Gazette. So Philip selling ice cream, 1777.
Okay. Wow.
Let's give me some.
And the documentation of the first advertising.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
1820, Florence Nightingale is born.
Okay, that's great. Good.
We like her.
Yes.
1896. I really like this one. New York City passes the nation's first anti-spitting law.
Gross.
And, you know, we laugh about it, but then the follow-up, because you're acting the same exact way I did, it was to combat tuberculosis.
Oh.
Imposing fines and jail times. Doesn't that make so much sense?
I guess so. Yeah. Yes. So TB was spread through, ew, gross. Yeah. That is gross.
By 1910, more than 2,500 arrests had been made.
Oh. Wow.
Despite, and this is the other part that I love, despite backlash from protesters. Yep, spitting on anti-spitting signs.
Oh.
Some things just don't change.
I was going to say we've grown so much, right?
All right. 1908, so good job trying 1896 New York City. Good for you. 1908, wireless radio broadcasting is patented by Nathan B. Stubblefield. That was going to be my history highlight of the day, but then I did a deeper dive.
Oh, okay.
And there's much speculation of whether he really is the founder of modern radio.
Okay.
So I backed off of that one.
Ooh, that sounds like an episode we have to do.
It could be. And okay. I kind of wanted to do more because the town that he's from, I think, is Murray. They've, you know, the birthplace of.
Yeah.
And then there's much speculation. So.
Okay.
1933, not a good one. The kidnapped Lindbergh baby is found dead in 1932 on this date. 1937, George Carlin is born.
Ha ha ha.
And I really just put that one in here because I still love when my dad discovered George Carlin. He was walking through a bookstore and he saw a book with a funny title on it that George Carlin had written. I don't know which one. And then he got home. This is when he was like 80 years old. And he reads the book and he asked me the next time I saw him, he said, "Have you ever heard of this George Carlin?" And I was like, "Yeah, he's a famous comedian, The Seven Words." You can't.
Right.
And yeah. My dad says, "Well, I bought one of his books," and he told me the title, and it was a funny title. And then he goes, "The guy's filthy."
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was like, "Yes, yeah. Dad, that's what he does." So yeah. It just made me laugh. So
and those are the words we can't say on our radio program,
are.
Remember?
Yeah. But you came close doing some slang. Let's see, 1942. This one I liked, and I want to do a deeper dive on this one too. A Nazi U-boat sinks an American cargo ship at the mouth of the Mississippi River.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting. Oh, that's yeah. I didn't
yeah, know. Don't you want to know more about
pretty
that?
Pretty close to home. Yeah.
Yeah. 1949, the Soviet Union lifts its 11-month blockade against West Berlin. Ha ha! Berlin airlift. Ha, you go ahead. You go ahead. We'll just airlift everything. We don't care. Blockade Berlin. We're fine. So. All right. Then my history highlight of the day, the thing I think had the most impact on history, 1215.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew you were going to like that one. I only like modern history. So English barons serve an ultimatum on King John, which eventually leads to the creation and signing of the Magna Carta.
Okay.
So why do we care? It's the also known as the Great Charter. It was sealed by King John of England in 1215. It established key legal principles addressing the barons' demands for the recognition of their rights.
Wow, 1215.
The document provided protection against unjust rule, influencing the development of democracy and human rights. And it is celebrated as a symbol of freedom from oppression. It has impacted legal systems worldwide, including the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So the Magna Carta on this day in 1215.
Yeah.
So what I missed.
No, I think you got it. And I think that, yes, that beats out the radio, the birth of radio, especially if we're not sure if that's correct either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it was the real birth of radio.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean.
Which one has more importance?
Yes. But in 1215, I mean, I'd like to even know more a little bit about that and how specific it was to what sort of, because, right, I mean, the Constitution was very focused on a certain population.
Yeah.
So in 1215, what was the population? Who were they? Were
probably,
they the
probably
elitist,
the landowner, the landowners. I mean, right there, it starts with the barons.
Right.
So it's
and how many people did that include at the time? And,
eight. No, I don't know.
Right. I mean,
I have no idea.
But to then have that much influence, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly influenced, we know, the writers of the Declaration of Independence, so.
Well, great.
And then our Constitution. And you know what one of our inalienable rights is? The right to candy.
The right to chocolate. Yes. And we know exactly where to get it. Our favorite candy shop, Bruce's Candy Kitchen. If it's not your favorite, that's okay. But we do have Kelly Trucks Taylor with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you. I can't wait to learn more about you and more about the Candy Kitchen. So let's start. We are going to start just with you.
Okay.
So tell us where you grew up. Let's just start with that.
Okay. I grew up in Seaside, Oregon, and Cannon Beach as well. I was born in Seaside in June 1980. And then, yeah, attended Cannon Beach Elementary School because my parents were both working at the candy store. So I would take, my parents would bring me down to Cannon Beach, and I went to kindergarten through sixth grade there.
Oh,
you know, would walk to the candy store after school and just was normal. Was a Cannon Beach Cougar. It was the best little school ever. Then attended Broadway Middle School, Seaside High School, and then attended Willamette University. And after graduating there, came back to Cannon Beach, married my husband, and started working at the candy store full time.
Let's talk first about the Cannon Beach Elementary, because I love that. My sister-in-law used to work there.
Yes,
she Renee.
Yes, she taught my girls.
And it's the most adorable little school right there on the river.
Yep.
What was that like, being dropped off there and then just walking to school or walking to your to the shop?
It was just so fun. I actually did get to ride the bus because it was all of like two blocks and I was little. So it was, you know, I was the first off the bus all the time. But, you know, we'd walk onto the beach and it was just nothing normal. You know, beach day was every day if it was nice, and just magical. All the teachers were awesome. It's the same school my mom attended. So, and then my daughters got to start there. So.
And when your daughters went, was it still K through six?
It was K through five. Okay. I was one of the last sixth grade classes.
You were? Okay, because I didn't remember that.
Yes. So I was in the shift in the mid-90s where it went six through eighth went to Broadway. I was the last seventh, eighth grade class of Broadway, too.
And so how many kids were there? Because it was a pretty, I mean, it stayed pretty small.
It was, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 kids per class.
So normal.
You know, yeah, it was. They spread us out because it went all the way, the kids from Hamlet to Arch Cape. Came to Cannon Beach, so it wasn't just the kids in town,
right?
Know? So we had pretty good sizes, and then it got even smaller with the girls because there was less kids around.
And so, at what age did your friends realize that you worked or your family owned the candy shop?
Probably like second grade. I remember it was like bring your parents to work day, or you know, have your parents come and talk about their career. So yeah, and well, in kindergarten we would have gone a field trip to the candy store. They've done that since the late 60s. The kindergarten class would always go and have a field trip. So I'm sure I went then. I don't remember that. But, you know, early.
Yeah.
By third grade, it was really cool. You know, they would be like, I'll come over. I'll ride the bus.
Did that make you a rock star?
It never hurts. So, yeah. it helped me get my husband. He's a candy guy. So it didn't hurt.
So what was the setup with your folks? Like, who did what?
Well, my mom has been at the candy store since she graduated high school. And so she does everything. She's done everything. At that time, my dad was a candy maker. It was his part-time career. He's a retired firefighter. But before beginning that career, he helped at the store and he worked in the kitchen. And then my mom's just done everything else, from bookkeeping to chocolate making.
And then the candy store is from your
my grandparents. Yeah, okay. My mom's grandparents.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. How far back? Because I see it when I go through like the old yearbooks.
Yeah, 1963 was our first year. So April 1st, we just had our anniversary. And then Bruce and Treva were my grandparents, and that's my mom's parents, and so it's been in the family ever since.
So then your mom, and then your dad retired.
Yeah, well, he worked a little bit, and then went to firefighting.
Okay.
And we're his hobby.
Oh,
it was
so
not
funny.
His passion,
but he still did it.
Yes, he helped.
And have you always been in that same spot?
Yes.
Okay,
that's our original location. We've remodeled it twice. We did branch out and have a second location for about 8 years at the Seaside Outlet Mall. We tried that. And right going into, my daughter's freshman year of high school, we closed that because we just had too much going on. World headquarters in Cannon Beach is enough for us.
I remember going to that one too. I mean, it was
convenient.
So convenient.
It was.
But there's something about going in that Cannon Beach store, because I too went like as a little kid, about still walking in that door where the screen door is slamming. I mean, it's like. I don't know. It just it feels different.
It does.
It feels like stepping back in time, and then you see something really modern.
Right, of course.
And then you're like, oh, that just ruined it a little bit for me. Yeah. But no, the screen door.
Yeah. I know. I love that screen door.
So I love, yeah, dude, I love that too. So I love that you've already answered one of my questions of, was there a Bruce?
Yep, there was.
So there was. But do you know any of his origins and how they got into this?
Oh, yeah. He grew up in Seattle. My grandma's from Kansas, but Bruce grew up in Seattle. His family had a restaurant with a card room in the back. So he grew up in the restaurant business. And my grandma was working at an office near his restaurant, and somehow they met there. And then they moved out to Cannon Beach in 1962 and bought and ran a motel for a little bit. Maybe they came out in 60, sorry. Yeah, my mom was really little, so 60. They did that for a couple of years, decided the hotel business was not for them. She got a babysitter, you can't leave it. And so there was a restaurant and a candy store for sale. And my grandpa knew he didn't want to get into the restaurant business. And apparently he had visited the candy store quite often. He was a regular customer. It was Kretschke's Candy, and they were ready to sell. And so my grandparents bought it. My grandma's parents, Cecil and Jack, came out from Kansas to help him. And it was literally those four.
Oh, my gosh.
Bought the recipes and just figured it out. My great grandma would cook peanut brittle upstairs on her stove because she got the Betty Crocker recipe. And that's, you know, it was that condensed and small. And we just had to grow it. But yeah, so that's where we've been.
So about high school time then for you, you're still working in the candy shop.
When I was 14.
Did you ever work anywhere else?
Yes. In college, when I came back, I worked at a clothing store. Yeah. I'd spent all my money on clothing. And then I worked in a law office when I was at college, just as a part-time job. But it's been the candy store.
And what did you go to college for? What did you think you were going
to
do?
I went to play volleyball. But I got a sociology degree along the way with a minor in volleyball. So I didn't know. I did not ever. I wasn't coming back to run the store.
That was not my passion.
Sociology, psychology, those were my interests. I could have done, like, school counseling probably would have been a passion I went to. But graduated the degree, and my mom needed help. And Brian, my husband, had started working in the business during high school too. So he knew enough of the kitchen stuff that we could step in and help my mom keep it going.
So his passion, not yours, but you're still doing it.
Dumb luck, it was his passion that I fell in love with a kid at 14 that could fix taffy wrappers when we needed to. So it's been very helpful.
And he's the guy that you see in the kitchen, right? Like, he is the candy maker. There's other candy makers,
too. Yes, him and my little brother are the main candy makers. So,
yes. Yeah, but when you do, like, the field trips.
Yes, he leads the field trips, and he's the...
All those fun things.
Kind of the face of it now.
So how does one... Is it just... You start there when you're 14 and there's recipes in the back, and soon you start working in the kitchen and learning.
No.
Or do you go to some kind of culinary candy thing?
For us, no. Your first job is you're working up front. You're waiting on people. You got to get in the front line and really learn what it's about. Then in the past, you have to be at least 16 to work in the kitchen. Or 18 to run certain equipment. So it's if you've lasted enough summers. And Brian thinks you'll work, you get to go in the kitchen. So, you know, there's only so many people in the kitchen. Most of the employees we hire are our upfront staff that are waiting on customers. And there is candy school. Mm-hmm. We are part of a confectionery club, and they hold chocolate boot camps.
Oh, my gosh.
Or they'll have a weekend, a seminar of centers. So you learn to make caramel and creams and whatever, fudge, you know, whatever you need to learn. And so we go to, like, an annual convention with other candy people, and we'll have they call kettle talk. People will just shoot problems, and people will help. Hey, I make that. This is what's worked for me. I've adjusted. So, there is training. A lot of it, Brian, just the school of hard knocks. My uncle helped him when he was still there. And, you know, there's recipes written down. It's pretty basic. We keep things pretty simple. So it's just a lot of little trial and error and just experience.
I love the idea of a secret, like, it sounds very Willy Wonka-ish, like a candy cartel learning how to do things.
Well, and how many small, private, or, you know, independent candy shops are there left in the United States? I mean, is that still a kind of a big thing? I mean, because I look at yours and I think it's a boutique shop, right?
It's pretty limited. Right. You know, some other members that we're with, you know, they're in the Midwest and they might have like 5 stores. You know, they're a chain.
Right.
Like, but it's a big chain and they, you know, they're in grocery stores at their local level, you know, their regional level. I would have to see how many there are. I mean, there's always more people joining and everyone thinking it's a good idea to start a candy store and how fun it is, not realizing it's a lot of physical labor and it can be intense. But yeah, I should look into that. But, you know, there's a couple hundred people at these conventions. And so, yeah, that'd be interesting to know.
So what else is going on in your life? You've mentioned your girls.
Oh, yes. I have 2 grown daughters.
Oh, my gosh.
19 and 21. And that's why I'm a duck mom. My youngest is at U of O. And then my older daughter is actually studying abroad in England.
Oh, wow.
At University of Nottingham.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's crazy. This year, she's been there since September. And she's studying as an exchange student through Southern Oregon. That's her main school. And so she's living her best life, traveling all over Europe. And, yeah, that's what they're doing. So Brian and I are just hanging out.
And are either of them eyeing life in a candy shop?
Not at this moment. Okay. But, you know, never say never. Yeah. I never was going to do it either. And my mom's still at work, so I still have to work for my mom, so yeah, they can't come yet.
Well, and your brother works there,
not
too.
Their turn.
I mean, you have other generations out there.
Yes, so we will see. But Aubrey's studying accounting, and Lily's studying psychology, so who knows where she'll go. But they work. They'll be home for the summer to help us out.
So tell us how you met Brian. What's that story?
Well, we played soccer together when we were 8. So because I went to Cannon Beach, but my parents, we lived in Seaside, I got put on the Seaside soccer team, not knowing anyone, not being my classmates. And so I went to soccer. His mom was actually our coach, Teresa. She was an interior designer. It was a little Bad News Bears, like, hey, they need a coach. She got a book and a whistle, and we were the little Seaside soccer team. So we met when we were 8, and we're just buddies. And then, I mean, he was just the sweetest guy ever, and I always was trying to hook him up with my friends. He was friend-zoned hard, but and then in high school, my older friend suggested that we should go to homecoming together, and the rest is history.
And what year was that?
1994.
Oh, my.
So, wow. Yeah.
So freshman year.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yep. So it's been a long time, but yeah.
I love co-ed sports.
Yeah.
On a side
note. It was so good. Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah. When they separate. Yeah. We had lots of fun.
I know. When they separate, they separate them the next year.
Yeah. And when I was older, yeah, we could go. I mean, they didn't separate you till almost like 6th grade or
even
middle school. Okay. It was because there just weren't enough kids then.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
But more importantly, who's the better soccer player?
Oh, soccer. Well, he's just a big guy. He'll probably. Yeah.
Oh, big guy. He could have big,
clumsy
feet.
Yeah, he could move then. Nah, he was pretty agile. So we were a good duo. It was a good team.
But you were an athlete.
Oh, yes.
So obviously that was an interest too. Yeah. So what other sports did you do?
Soccer only lasted till middle school. And then I played volleyball, basketball, and track all through high school. And then I went to Willamette and played volleyball all 4 years. Then came home and coached volleyball for a couple years. Then took a little break after having the girls. And then went back to coaching once they were a little older. And I coached middle school for 6 or 7 years. And then stopped that after Aubrey was in high school because I wanted to watch her play. So,
makes sense.
It's a soft spot in my – yeah, I love sports. Important.
So back to the store for a second.
Yes.
You know, running the museums, we rely on a lot of tourists.
Mm-hmm.
What, if you had to guess, what percentage of your sales come in the summertime versus...
Tourists versus locals.
March?
Oh, probably 90% tourists over locals. Yeah. I mean, besides like holidays, that's when I get to see my locals. But in the summer, I mean, probably about 60%.
Okay.
It feels like. I mean, it's a big chunk of our day. And that's June through September is really what I feel like is summer, or 4th of July through September.
See, that's what I was going to say, is that it feels like our tour season almost is continuous.
It is. It's nothing.
It goes up,
yes.
Obviously. But
yes. In the last 23 years, it's night and day. I mean, you would roll up the sidewalks is what my grandma used to say. And even when I was here, I mean, when I first came back, it's really expanded the off season. There's not much downtime anymore.
So when it comes to candy, saltwater taffy seems like the novelty purchase. Is that the number one?
Yes.
Like that's the number one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then our homemade chocolates, seafoam, salt caramels, you know, all of our chocolates we make in-house to roast our own nuts, make our own centers.
And then with all of people's diet issues, right? People do have a lot of diet issues. Are you seeing that those questions come about more? And how do you guys respond to those?
Well, conveniently, taffy's always been gluten-free.
Yeah.
Like candy is truly sugar.
It's sugar.
And it's more if you're a dairy. It's always been a situation like people have been sensitive to coloring. You know, we can tell them, hey, this has coloring. And that's what's nice with making it, where I can turn around and tell them exactly what's in it. We know the gluten's been the biggest deal, and then soy's becoming a little bit more. But that's a shift too. We're looking at ways to mix it up and make things alternative. We've done some dairy-free, like our chocolate's dairy-free. So we're learning to do dairy-free centers. And it's one thing we're going to learn at our next candy clinic.
Oh, there you go. You know, one fun thing, just recently bought little gift packets for Providence for our caregivers that were celebrating anniversaries. And several of them started work in the 90s. So it was like a 90s and 80s themed event. And Kelly's like, oh, do you want 90s themed candy? I'm like, yes. What candy did we eat in the 90s? I mean, are these things? And then, everything.
A lot of Warheads and Sour. Yeah. No, it was,
Everything in the bag was like, oh, yeah, we did eat this.
Yep.
We did eat this.
That was fun.
Have you ever done things like that? Or do you often try to put a spin on it when people do those custom orders?
What I've done, we always talk about projects. We always have projects we could do. But we've done theme like a 60th birthday. So candies from their childhood. Or I've done stuff where it's, candies from the 50s and 60s. I did a sock hop and I just kind of pull out those fun things that the vintage that was around there. And I get to be creative all the time. If someone has a theme, we'll do just darn anything in our power make it come together or make a cute tag.
They're so cute.
And doing that, do you know the decades already or do you have to do research on it?
Google. I have an idea. I have an idea of when it came out, but then you got to search things because, I wanted to do one candy. I was like, that was 2000s. That's not right. Google's my friend.
Okay, so it begs the question, what is your favorite candy that you personally will eat?
That we produce is probably a cashew crab. So it's cashew, caramel, and chocolate. And that was like my go-to when I was pregnant with both my girls. That was one piece a day, makes for a happy baby, and I hold true to that.
Okay, you said that you produce, so it makes it sound like you have another.
Oh, sure. Well, I like sour stuff. Sour Patch watermelons. We make, we carry this really fun fruity sour shark now from Verberg that's climbing up there. It's really yummy.
I love it. I mean, I'm just ready to go to Bruce's now. Thankfully, I have a nice little bag of candy from the 90s in my work bag anyways.
One you didn't give out or one you're supposed to give out?
Just bonus.
So in 20 seconds, what do you love about the coast here? What keeps you here?
It's beautiful. It's quiet. It's peaceful. We get three months of chaos, and then the rest of the time we kind of get it to ourselves. You know, I go walk on the beach every morning with my dog, and I can see no one quite often. So it's just gorgeous, and it is quiet, and you get to know people.
Well, that's great. Well, we're so glad we get to keep you here.
Thank you.
And we're so glad for Bruce's Candy Kitchen. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your impact on the community as a business and then as a family, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's very appreciated.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.